Welcome to Just Another Hunting Podcast. This is Steve with Mountain to Coast Outdoors in collaboration with Joseph from Way Out West Adventures. We dive deep into the world of hunting, exploring tactics, gear, and unforgettable stories from the field. Join us each week as we interview seasoned experts and passionate enthusiasts who share insights and experiences to help you enhance your hunting skills. Whether you're a novice seeking guidance or a veteran hunter looking for new challenges, this is your go-to resource for all things hunting. Tune in each week to step up your game and to connect with the community who shares your love for the great outdoors.
All right, guys, welcome back to, I think it's episode 19 or 20. I've already lost track. Start of season two. We're already in 2025, which is wild how fast time flies. But today I've got a special guest on. I've been bugging him quite a bit on Instagram. Finally got our schedules to connect. I got Matty Ice on from the Hushing Crew. How you doing, man?
Doing good. Yeah, pleasure to be on. And sorry, brother. The schedule is a little wild at all times. There's no really set schedule, which my wife doesn't love, but I'm a big fan of.
I hear you there. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Why don't you tell everybody how long you've been filming for Hush and kind of how that all started. I'm curious as well.
Yeah, man. So this is my fourth official year with Hush, and I filmed my first hunt for them about 5 years ago. And yeah, all this started, I was a full-time hunting guide right out of high school, and just loved being outdoors. I couldn't be outdoors enough, honestly. And the only thing I could find to really, you know, suit that need was guiding full-time. So I guided at an outfitter here in Northern Utah called R&K Hunting Company, super good dudes. And really just got into that. And back in high school and everything, I mean, I'm fairly young, I guess, but Instagram had just started. Like 2012 was my freshman year, right? So it had just started, popped off, and me and my buddies, we had an Instagram page, and I was obsessed with just trying to grow a brand or a platform. So I'd make hats and hoodies. And of course, when you're trying to do that, you have role models such as Hush. You know, they were the gold standard at the time. And so fast forward, you know, 6 years, 7 years, guiding full time. And I worked myself in a position with the outfitter to where I was running all their social media. And I bought my camera, my first laptop, and the outfitter, Daniel, had actually bought that for me, and he saw like my vision, I guess, and he's a super good man. And anyways, I taught myself how to run a camera, kind of YouTube University, you know, that whole thing, Peter McKinnon type of pathway, and really, really fell in love with running a camera. And then the next step, you know, growing our Instagram page for the outfitter. And I had kind of talked to the owner, and I was like, man, we should give a tag to one of the Hush guys and have them come hunt with us, and they could shout us out on Instagram, and that'd be a good way to grow. So anyways, I went to every Hush movie night, every hunt expo, hardly ever missed one from the time I was in high school or Hush started, honestly. And approached Casey and Eric and Brian and was like, hey guys, like, I have a tag I could give you guys, you know, it's like 2 million acres of private property, like elk everywhere, deer everywhere. Like, you guys should come hunt. They're like, oh man, we're not really into that, but like, we'll keep that in mind. Fast forward like two more years. Casey reached out to me and he's like, hey man, my son drew a youth any bull tag for your neck of the woods. Cause I had always stayed in touch and comment threads on YouTube and Instagram and everything. And he's like, do you know anything about that? I'm like, oh man, this is perfect. Like, our ranch covers a bunch of that zone. You guys could hunt this private property. Anyways, that's how that all came together. And when Casey and BMAC and Gage showed up to hunt that elk tag, I had been filming and editing my own little hunts and just had really become comfortable with a camera. And when they showed up again and everybody, I had my camera ready willing and able. And I was like, hey guys, like, would it be cool if I just filmed and I will give you guys all the footage? I'll just give you the SD cards. And they're like, yeah, that would be sick, you know? So anyways, looking back now, I'm like, man, I would die to have some kid who's eager and just wants to run around and get shots, you know? So anyways, I didn't realize at the time how I set myself up, I guess. So got all the footage. I was guiding while I was filming, and we killed Gage a sweet bull, and the footage turned out great. The film turned out great. I really hit it off with those guys, and it wasn't but two or three weeks later, Casey called me and he's like, hey man, our other camera guy, which is Martin at the time, Martin Chagg, he was hunting a big deer on the front and he was out of commission. He's like chasing this giant deer, and Casey needed a camera guy to go film in Wyoming. And he's like, can you come film? And I was like, dude, I'm there. You know, like, you don't have to pay me nothing. I just want to come hang out with you. So that's kind of how it all started, man. And, you know, after I filmed that Wyoming whitetail hunt, that was a big eye opener for me. I had this vision to go film this hunt, and we ended up killing like the first hour we were out there. We horsebacked in wall tent, getting all this footage. And then all of a sudden we just see a buck and kill it. I'm like, whoa, that was fast, you know? And then they're like, man, we would love you to come to Colorado and film semi-live with the whole crew. And that was going to be the first time I had met Eric. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'd love to. And they're like, but you have to edit the Wyoming whitetail film and bring it, and that'll be the test. If that film turned out good, like, we'll offer you a job. So that was crazy for, you know, young Matty Ice, probably 21 years old at the time. And I had never really edited something that, I don't know, important. And it was a tough one, man. Only had like 5 or 6 hours of filming to make a video that could live on the Hush page, you know? So it was all pretty cool, man, the way it all worked out. And I look back now and it's just crazy how all the stars have aligned. And I just am so grateful for everything, but pretty wild story, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like being willing to work for free and being very motivated, you know, is kind of the reason why it all worked out. I'm sure you get probably a ton of messages on social media, guys that want to get into the industry, you know, filming and creating content, all that stuff. I guess that'd probably be your tip for them, is be willing to work for free and go get your own camera and just kind of volunteer your time and see if you hit it off with somebody, huh?
Yeah, dude, exactly. It's actually been eye-opening. So Logan, he's like my best friend, and he went to work for All In, which is a great company. And he went and worked. He went to work there September 1st of this year of 2024. So right when our season was cranking. So it left me.
All right, guys, quick pause to the episode. If you want to support the show, we would really appreciate it. It's going to help us keep this thing rolling. Head on over to mountaincoastoutdoors.com/shop. Pick up a hat, maybe a sweatshirt or a t-shirt. Use code podcast at checkout. Save 10% and help the show grow. All right, guys, back to the podcast.
Filming BMAC, Casey, and Eric. And we ran lean as just me and Logan, you know? I was kind of the junior producer. He was the senior producer. We did all the filming, editing, social media, everything for Hush was me and Logan, basically. Eric and Casey would do a lot of like some Instagram stories from time to time. Eric and Casey would post a reel or two, maybe a week, but basically the bulk of all the content was me and Logan. So when he told me he was leaving, I got nervous, man. I'm like, dang, that's a lot of work. And so I immediately was like, okay, I got to search. I got to find some help. Dude, it would blow your mind how many people I have tried to like reach out to, tried to hire, how many, like, it's impossible to find somebody who wants to work hard, who knows how to hunt, who knows their way around a camera half decent. I don't need a professional, you know, and then knows how to tell a story. Like, I don't even need you to be crazy good at editing. I just need you to have the eye and be able to tell a story. And man, I we were lucky and were able to hire a couple like independent contractors to help us when I couldn't be two places at once. But still, man, like trying to find an extra hand or an editor is tough. And I almost think like, dude, where are all the hungry kids that, you know, dream of being in the hunting industry? Like, this is the golden ticket. But it, I don't know. I guess we haven't publicly gone out and said anything on Hush about looking, but I've been reaching out. I've been prodding, and dude, it's not an easy job to fill.
Man, I would have thought it would have been like the first, you know, second guy, maybe at the most you had to ask, and you would have had somebody to come hunt with you guys all season.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like we kind of went straight to, you know, some higher end guys and kind of worked down from there. You know, we hired this kid, Mitch. He used to do all the filming and editing for Chris B and really got his channel kind of going. And Mitch is a stud. He has his own production company. I believe it's in Michigan. And that kid's a stud. But dude, he knows his worth and knows his value. And he lives in Michigan, you know? So we hired like the best, one of the best of the best. Worked with him. And then I was like, dude, do you have any other recommendations? And he's like, reach out to Kobe, you know, Kobe Owens and I are good buddies at Weatherby. And Kobe's like, dude, you know, I'm slammed, but like these two guys would be good, you know? So we've worked a little bit with Josh Hubbs and then Logan Romney. Those two kids are studs and they've helped us out when we were in a pinch. But I think both those guys have like aspirations to continue and do their own thing. But man, I want like a hungry person that I guess doesn't really want to be, I don't even know how to say this, but doesn't need to be the star, you know, doesn't need to be in front of the camera. We don't need another influencer. You know, we just need somebody who's like obsessed with telling a story or obsessed with filming or taking photos. Like that's what I look for. And it's hard to find, man. So any kids are out there or any people in the industry or wanting to get into the industry are listening to this, like reach out to me. 'Cause man, you could really set yourself up for a sweet life if you, you know, worked at it and grinded and learned how to run a camera, learn how to tell a story. And I mean, if I could do it, anybody could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. What I've learned, in my small circle, obviously I've been trying to grow my YouTube channel for a while now, and it's a freaking grind, man. Like, they've killed it. You guys have killed it. It's impressive. That goes without saying though, but I guess what I was going with that is like trying to find somebody who loves to hunt and loves to spend time in the woods, but is willing to not be the tag holder and has any desire to run a camera is pretty hard to find. You know, most of the guys I hunt with have no desire to carry a camera or, you know, even if I was to set it up for them, like they don't even want it on their pack. They don't want the batteries. They don't want the lenses. They're like, you can film it or I'm not filming anything type of deal. So, but I'm really surprised, man, that you guys had a hard time finding people. That's kind of mind blowing to hear, honestly.
Yeah, man. It's, I thought so too. Like, 'cause Logie was cool. You know, he gave us some good heads up and I immediately was like, okay, like, you know, you have those people you follow on social media that you're like, oh dude, they're creative. They're always crushing it. Like they've got a style. I immediately go to those kids. I call everybody a kid, anybody under like 50, immediately go to those guys. And they're like, oh, sorry, man, booked for the season already and booked for next season. Or, you know, it's $2,500 a day type of thing. And I'm like, goodness, like maybe I'm in the wrong industry. You know, maybe I need a production company, but it's pretty wild, man. I truly, truly believe this. And I feel this like, there is a void of creators or creatives, I guess, in the hunting space. You know, you see few that stand out, and like I've had the privilege to hang out and shoot with a bunch of them, you know, like your Steven Drakes, your Sam Solholtz, your Jason Matt Zingers, those type of guys. And I've had the privilege to hang out and hunt and film with all those guys. And man, I don't want to say it's a dying art, because it's like our whole world right now is digital and content based, but it's like there's not many people that are willing to, you know, be the guy behind the lens. And Hush is super unique and cool to where they don't want me behind the lens. They don't want a fourth wall. You know, they want Matty Ice to be part of the story. They want me to have tags. They want me to go fishing, which is super unique. But yeah, man, it's, I don't know how much I want to beat this dead horse, but it's tough to flip and find anybody that's motivated, I guess. You'll find people that maybe have like alternative motives that, you know, want to just come for the clout, you know, come and hang out with the Hush guys and maybe get some clout and maybe want to come and film something, but they don't want to always be the one not pulling the trigger. And that's fine, but it's tough to find somebody that fits the bill.
Well, I'm sure after this off season, you guys will be able to find somebody that's willing to commit. I would guess.
I hope so, man. Like the dream would be, you know, find somebody that could do it seasonal, you know?
Yeah.
Cause it's like, it's a lot, like the schedule and everything's a lot for somebody to commit 12 months, but like, hey dude, could you come for 2 months? Do you want to like sleep 60 days in the dirt and just like grind and have like the time of your lives? Like sign you up. Like, okay, here we go, you know? And it's a lot. Like I probably slept like 90 days in the dirt this fall. And that's not including, you know, like shed hunts or any other thing that happens before the season. So it's a lot. And it's also, I don't know, it's also the dream life. Like, you know that, like that's the dream you're chasing and that's your passion. And it's easy to see with your content that it's like, there's nothing you'd rather be doing than sleeping in the dirt or just like hiking to canyons that you feel like not a lot of people get to, or maybe nobody's ever set foot in certain areas. And that's the same kind of itch that I always am looking to scratch. And Eric's the worst at that. Eric will just want to spend 20 days in an area and just have no rush to get home. And yeah, man, it's pretty wild, but it's a good life.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a young man's game. It sounds like you're looking for definitely a young kid with no wife, no kids, or a wife that's really, really understanding. Because I know I take a lot of time off my real job, quote unquote, the job that pays the bills. You know, I probably spent 60 days at least in the field this year, or 2024. But my trips are broken up, right? Like I got a spring bear trip, and then another spring bear trip, but there's like a month between those two. And then you get into September. I got September, a couple of weeks, and then a little like 2 week break, and then another hunt, and then a 2 week break and another hunt. But you guys are just like, boom, 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 boom. So I got to ask you, it sounds like you're married.
Yep.
Do you have any little ones?
Yep. So I have two little girls, a 4 year old and then a year and a half old. And it's honestly crazy, man. Like, my wife and I were like high school sweethearts, you know, she was the cheer captain. I was the football captain type of thing. And just your stereotypical small town, you know, and she's only ever known me to be like on the mountain shed hunting or fishing 5 days a week. And then when we were first married, you know, we were married for 3 years before we had kids. It was like, I was guiding for 90 days straight, you know, and she would maybe see me once a week, once every 2 weeks if she was lucky. And that's all she's ever known. And she's a champion and holds down the fort, but it's tough, man. And we've kind of compromised within Hush to like try not to have trips that go over like that 8 to 10 day mark and then give me 2 or 3 days home. And then same kind of thing. But man, this year was a wild being, I guess, the only real creative. And Casey and Eric stepped up huge. Like they self-filmed a lot of stuff, but I mean, it was filming for 8 or 10 days. I'd come home, I'd straight into edits, you know, dumping footage, clearing cards, posting, trying to stay relevant, and then gone again. And it was fighting for my life, I guess, treading water. It was wild, man.
Oh, I was going to say like 2 or 3 days home. Like I know from my personal experience on a way smaller level, obviously, but you get home from a hunt, first of all, you got an animal to deal with. You got clothes, you got gear that's all got to be dealt with. And then you've got editing and cards to clear and batteries to charge and power banks to charge. And like 2 days is gone like that. Oh. I mean, I don't even, so you're home, but you're not really home.
I know that's what's hard. Like, I love Eric to death. He's like a brother to me, but that's what's hard, I think, for Eric. Cause like he's in like a serious relationship, you know, he lives with Kate and Kate lives with him, and they don't have any kids. They have their dogs, but he like, it's hard for him to understand, I think. Cause it's like, man, you come home for 2 or 3, 4 days and like, you do your laundry, you go to your gym, you know, you charge your batteries, like you're ready to rock. I'm like, I do 2 or 3 days of dumping cards, charging batteries, laundry, trying to upload, and then we're leaving again. That's no time to, you know, take the wife on a date or go play with the girls, really. So it was a lot this year, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. Like, I feel like I created some of my best content ever, and I feel like every year is just easier to tell those stories. It gets easier to see creativity, I guess. It gets easier to run the cameras. The cameras are getting so bonkers. It's like, it's almost too much at some point, because you're like, man, this almost looks too good to not feel rugged enough to be a hunt, you know? And I'm that snob, you know, always trying to run it wide open, f1.2 or f1.8, but there's certain times where I'm like, man, this just looks almost staged, or this, like, we don't vlog as much anymore. And I was running a gimbal for a while, and I'm like, that looks too fake. Like, so it's been an evolution of storytelling, and I don't think I have it down yet, but I'm a lot more confident than I was when I was 20 years old, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know I really appreciate those quality films. But I go, like, I talked to some guys recently about that. I don't think it really affects the overall views you're going to get, in my personal opinion, because I see some, and I'm not talking crap, like, but I see some footage that's pretty rough. And man, those videos blow up, right? So I don't think that really matters, but I think it's more or less if you're proud or happy with what you're putting out, right? If you look at it and you're like, yeah, that looks exactly how I wanted it to look, or whatever. But I'm with you, because it's just those cinematic shots and the slow-mo stuff and the stuff that's filmed in, like, you know, 60 frames a second that you can slow down, and it's not all choppy, and it's, you know, it's 4K and it's not way overexposed and blown out. I mean, those are things that I'm trying to get better at myself. So when I see somebody put a video out, no matter who it is, and it's flawless, it's like, man, that guy, like, people have no idea how hard that was for that guy to be able to capture that stuff. And it's just perfect. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
So I appreciate it. That's for damn sure.
I'm the same way, man. And when I got hired on, like, you could probably go back and find the video. They did like a podcast, right, when they first announced that I was part of the team. And I was right there, like, putting my foot down, like, you know what you guys need? You need more cinematic. You need more slow motion. You know, you need less vlogging, you know, less talking and more just cinema, you know? And they were just like, yeah, like, hold your horses, you know, like, you're the new guy, you know? But even 5 years ago, I was saying, like, we should have like a 3 to 5 minute just B-roll, just buttery smooth, the most cinematic, just perfect. There's not one flaw in that 5 minute film. And that 5 minute film just tells the story of the hunt. And then you do your 30 minute to an hour film that's just vlogging and talking. And then you can serve both audiences, people that don't care to listen to people talk. They just want to see art, you know, and then people who to see the personalities or just see every step of the trip. And we never really did that. It's kind of been a blend of it, but I don't know. It's always an evolution, man. And YouTube is just an ever changing game that the second you think you have or dial, like, think again. And the more time I spend editing and uploading these films, you know, one a week, basically year round, or two a week year round. And you just see some blow up or some that should have just crushed that just flop. And you're like, man, I don't understand this. But the one constant is, as long as like you're true to yourself and like you're proud of that piece of content you put out, that's all that really matters. Like the views and everything, that doesn't matter, man. Like some of my best films I've ever done, you know, haven't done hardly anything. Like my best film I think I've ever done is still under like 50,000 views or 100,000 views, which isn't great for our channel. Like it's average, you know, for some of our hunting films, but we have a lot of hunting films that are 300,000, 400,000, couple million views. And those films, the quality, they're trash compared to what we do now. But the one just thing that stands out, and I just have to tell myself this all the time, is like the story is what matters. The story, if you can get people bought into the story, hooked on the story from the jump, you know, the first 10, 15% of the video, it doesn't really matter unless you're not clipping your audio or way overexposed and blown out. Like people will sit through a lot of crappy footage, you know, to stay in the story. And that's been a huge, I guess, like, what's the word? Just peace for me. Like when I'm out in the field and I don't really know. I don't really know how else to describe it. I don't want to talk too much, but I used to be the guy that would have the shot list, you know, on my phone, just like, okay, you know, hiking, low angle, wide hiking shot. Okay. Now a mid hiking shot from quartering two. Okay. Now a tight hiking shot, you know, of their hand on the bow or the face. And I'd have literally 100 shots lined out. And I would spend the whole trip just running and checking off those shots, and the hunt would be over and I would just be drained, man, just tired and never really felt part of the story. And the more I've evolved as like a camera guy, I guess, the more I've found that, dude, you can't write the hunting stories. Like there is no predicting what's going to happen out there. And I guess my biggest tip, and maybe this is like giving away too many of my secrets, but my biggest tip for anybody is when you're out there filming and you don't know what to film, just think of what emotion you're feeling right then. And anytime you have a major emotion change, get 5 supporting clips to like show that emotion. So, you know, if you're sitting there in the sun and it's just, you're bored, you're tired, it's hot, you know, get 5 or 6 shots showing somebody napping, the sun, you know, the wind, being bored and tired. And every time there's a big emotion change, just get 5 or 6 supporting clips. And dude, it's crazy how easy and clean and simple it is to tell stories when you're just telling people your emotion. And I honestly live by that now. Like I rarely have clips that I don't use in a film, where before I'd have like a terabyte of footage for one film and maybe use 80 gigabytes of it, you know, and just be throwing away all this footage. But now it's like I basically use every clip because I'm seeing the edit in my brain and I just know that I want to take people on this emotional roller coaster, and that's just supporting shots. So I don't know if that's too big of a little secret. I've never really heard too many people talk about that, but that's my secret formula, I guess, for filming.
Yeah, I feel like I'm personally in that. I don't have a shot list at all, but like I end up with a bunch of footage I don't use. Like I'm filming too much stuff to make sure I have B-roll and stuff to fill in those voids when you're like, you know, there's nothing going on, right? Like the elk hunt video I just put out, we killed 2 bulls, but it was like day 10 we shot those bulls, right? So there was a lot of time to get to that point. And it's like, how do you keep the audience captivated to even like get to the kill shot, right? Like the shot everybody wants to see. I always struggle with that. It's like sometimes I've, well, until that video, really, I've always started the video off like really fast and kind of cut out the first 4, 5, 6 days, whatever it is, and just kind of got to the moment. And I've noticed on that particular film, people seem to really appreciate the struggle that was shown in the time it took to get to the punching the tag part. You know what I mean? Yep. But I definitely got to get better at not just filming stuff to film stuff, because it takes so freaking long to go through all that footage. It's like, you got to watch every clip. I can remember a lot of them, but it's like, is there anything good in there? Is there anything good in this one? Is there anything good in that one? It's just like,
yep.
It's hours and hours to go through that stuff for no reason. So I got to get better at that.
Yeah, man. It's one of those things that it's like, you'd rather have too much footage, I guess. But I also got to try and like maximize my workflow. You know, I don't want to sit home for a full 8-hour day. You know, I have my office outside of my house. I come out to my little office. I don't want to sit out here for 8 hours clearing cards, backing stuff up. I want to, you know, have the meat and potatoes and just the prime stuff that I know is going to make a film, drag and drop that stuff and move on. And oh man, it gets me so excited and it gets me like amped to tell stories, because whether it's an hour long film with, you know, a deep history and backstory, or if it's like a 15-minute film I just finished up editing today of me going ice fishing, like it can be anything. And I guess that's my favorite part, is I consume a lot of content myself, you know, whether that's fishing content, hunting content, any of it. And I had a call with Eric. Me and Eric talk daily, and he was talking to me, and we were just talking about YouTube and Instagram and just like, what do people want to see? Like what should we make this year? You know, like what can we do different? And dude, he just reassured me what I already knew. He's like, man, you know, I'm just editing this moose shed hunt. You know, he does a lot of like the rough cuts on shed hunts, and then I'll go in and polish them up. But he's like, I'm just editing this moose shed hunt, and I was trying to find some shed hunts, you know, to inspire me on YouTube. And dude, there ain't crap for like good shed content or like anywhere. And he's like, it's just wild how nobody is like taking that next step to want to like pull their camera out more, talk more than just like, here's a shed, picking it up. Here's a shed. He's like, nobody's telling stories. And I see that a lot, dude, with hunting, with fishing. And there's not a lot of people out there trying to take you on these hunts or take you on these fishing trips and telling these stories. And that's what always validates me sometimes when I get in a rut of like, man, like we're not getting the views, you know, it's just, what is this? Like we have 500,000 subscribers and we can't even get 20,000 views on a video. I get in these ruts, you know? And then I always just look to it and it's like, man, we're telling stories, and whether that affects 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people, like the story is all that matters. And if that person was able to sit through that whole video and take something from it and be inspired, like, dude, that's all I could ever hope for. So that's what gets me pumped every day, is like trying to tell stories and trying to motivate people, because whether you feel it or not, or other people feel it or not, like there's not a whole lot of people doing it. And we might be a little more in tune to it because that's like our passion and like our job, I guess. But if you really go search like 2025, you know, Colorado archery mule deer, there'll probably be like 50 videos, but out of those 50, maybe like 5 decent videos that you could sit through, and maybe 1 or 2 that you're like, damn, that dude is talented, you know? Yeah. So that's something that I'm like, it's not oversaturated. It's definitely not.
Well, I think a lot of people, and I could admit to this for sure, like I think a lot of people think that you can create a YouTube channel and you're going to hit 10,000 subs in 6 months, and then you're going to be at 25,000 subs a year in, and then you're going to be, you know, 2 years in, you're going to have 50,000. And it's just like something that is, it's just not that way. You know, there's, I think a lot of guys that start And I've thought about quitting doing this stuff too many times. Like, dude, is it really worth it? But it's just not a quick success type of thing. Like you'll see a lot of people start and then, you know, a year in, they're like, man, they're done with it. And I think that's why there's the void, right? Like there's not very many people that are willing to carry a camera around and extra lenses and all the batteries and all the crap and then film and put a video together and they get 3,000 views. And yep. Then, you know, the next year they're 10,000 views and they're at, you know, whatever. It's just, it's a process. And I think a lot of people just kind of get slapped with reality throughout that process. And they're like, you know what? This is a lot freaking harder than I thought it was going to be. It takes a ton of time and you got to love it, man. And that's why I still do it. Cause I enjoy just going back and watching those videos, our own videos, like reliving all those memories, sharing them with yep. my kids, with my buddies, with my mom, with my dad. Like even if they don't get a ton of views, like I truly enjoy just going back and reliving that trip. So yeah. Hopefully more people start doing it, but there's definitely a void. That's for sure.
Yeah, man, you got it figured out. Like if you stay true to that, you know, just really loving sharing that with your friends and family and like reliving those memories for yourself, it's fail proof, man. You just stay consistent. And one of my favorite things to do, me and my dad are really close. He lives across the street from me and we've been close my whole life, but my favorite thing, I have like this habit, I guess, where I'll finish editing a film, like one of our feature films, not just a random video, but like a feature film, and I'll export it and I'll go to bed. And then the next day, you know, I'll like plan a movie night with my dad and I'm like, okay, we got to watch this. And I sit down with a notepad and he gets to be the first one to watch it all the way through with me. And we'll sit in his living room and I'll screen mirror it, you know, and watch the whole film. And I'll just make little notes like, oh, that audio popped there. You know, that was a rough transition, but he's just loving it. Right. And yeah. I feel like I can see things way more critically when I have somebody else watching it with me. And that's been one of my favorite things is my dad. He's hunted and fished his whole life. And he's like, man, you have the dream job. And it's so cool to show him all these adventures that we do. Cause he's always just been the guy, you know, general season rifle deer or over the counter elk, like one or two tags a year, maybe. And he never knew all this other stuff existed. And he's like, what do you mean you're going to Hawaii for the third time this year to hunt axis deer? Like, what do you mean you're going to go hunt black bear off a boat for 10 days? Like, what are you talking about? And it's just cool to be able to share those stories with, like you said, friends and family. It means everything.
Yeah, it's funny. I do the same thing. I'll export it to YouTube and leave it, you know, unlisted so nobody can see it. And then yep. I'll send it to like, I got a buddy, James, my brother, my dad, Joseph, a few of my good buddies that hunt. And I'm like, dude, please in the next day or two, watch this video. And if you see any like weird, you know, weird stuff or any audio that's like super quiet or super loud compared to the rest, like send me a text, let me know if you see anything goofy. And I'm doing this, like my wife, it drives her insane. I'll edit a video, screen mirror in the living room. And I'm making notes in my phone and she's like, how many times are you going to rewatch this thing before just freaking post it? And I'm like, I want it to be as perfect as I can make it. And I know I yep. have a long ways to go for sure still, but when you spend all that time, like you don't want to put it out and then you go back and watch it when it's live on YouTube and you're like, man, that looks like crap or man, that audio is terrible. Or you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
So I thought I was the only one that did that dumb stuff.
No, man. Speaking of your wife, my wife will always give me crap because, you know, like she tries to like get after me for being on my phone. And I'm like, honey, it's 2 p.m. I came in to eat lunch. Like, this is my job. I have to post on Instagram, you know, post YouTube shorts, all this. And she'll just hear the audio just loop, you know, 8 or 10 yeah. times. She's like, are you the one is that how you have like 100,000 views, you just watch it 100,000 times? Like, how many times are you gonna watch it? And I'm like, sorry, like I'll go in like an hour later, just watch the reel again. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know, I like watching some of the stuff I make, like give me a break.
Yeah. Oh yeah, my wife is mouthy as it, she's Italian, so she's not afraid to tell you how she feels, and that's to anybody, not just me. So I catch a ration of shit from her. I can promise you that.
That's awesome, dude.
It's part of it, but oh well. Okay, so sure. If we have any listeners left, so we talked about that a while, but I'm curious for myself. Camera gear. I'm curious. So if a guy, obviously you could get, you know, you can buy a camera that's $6,000 or $7,000 if you want to, but for a guy that's getting into filming or maybe thinking about like upgrading equipment, I'm curious as well, like what camera body and what lens, if you had to just pick one, would you, I guess, advise people to purchase?
So if I only could run one camera, it'd probably be my FX3 with like the Sony 20mm G Master lens. So that's kind of like the upper end. That's been like my sweet spot. But I think, dude, you cannot go wrong. You can find these cameras for cheap used. And I've sold the same camera body for fairly cheap and then turn around and buy a brand new one again because I love it. The Sony A7 IV, man. You can find them used for $1,500 with a lens, sometimes $2,000. And that, buy once, cry once. That's kind of a method I live by. And another method is like the dollar per use method. Like you spend $2,000 on that camera and lens, you better use it 2,000 times, you know, for you to get your value out of it. And that's what I'm filming on right now. That Sony A7 IV, you know, it's their hybrid camera between their photo and video, but it is like all time. It lives on my chest. It might not be my workhorse like my FX3, but if somebody just had to buy a camera, I would say the Sony A7 IV. And if that's above your price range, I'd step down to the Sony A7 III. I'd stay in that hybrid camera range, you know? The A7S III, still spendy, but the A7 III basically does everything the A7S III does other than the low light and, you know, that 4K 120 type of stuff. But I'm a big fan of the Sony A7 IV, and my go-to lens is 20mm G Master. That's my favorite lens of all time. But then 24-105, that's kind of my run and gun, 1-400, you know, 2-600. But I do have a couple cameras that I have my eye on, some things that pretty interesting that I haven't pulled the trigger yet because they're still $4,000 or $5,000, you know, but some things that I might be changing up in the future. But yeah, one body and one lens, the FX3 and the 20mm. 1.8.
Okay. Yeah, it's something I struggle with because all of my stuff for the most part is self-filmed and I have a great camera body and I have some good lenses, but I'm really looking forward to seeing that Sony A7 V hit the market. That every, you know, there's been some rumors that it's coming out soon because the A7 S3 is what I've been filming with and it still takes good pictures if you frame them right. Yeah, you obviously you can't crop in with the low megapixels, which I'm starting to feel a little bit more comfortable with how these cameras work. And I'm starting to understand actually like what you can do with them. But it's taken me 4 years. So it's been a grind to get to this point, but, lenses though, like, so I miss like probably at least 50% of the kill shots because I'll have like so I usually run the 17-28 Tamron F2.8.
Love that lens.
Yeah, and it's
right
cheap.
There on the shelf. Yep.
It's like $500-$600 brand new, which is super cheap for an F2.8. But the issue with it, like self-filming, is obviously you don't have the reach, right? So like, for example, my brother shot a buck like right at light. We were coming up over a saddle in this burn area and I saw two bucks and anyway, pretty good frame. And I had that 17-28 on. And I'm like, I couldn't zoom in enough to get the, and you don't have time to like take my pack off, switch lens. Like you got to get the shot, right? You got to shoot the animal or the animal's gone. So, I've been thinking about buying that 24-105 F4 just so I have a little bit more reach, but I also, part of me is like, man, I want that 24-70 F2.8 for low light stuff in the morning. And then in the evening I wish there was like a 24-200 F2.8 that, somebody would make, but
yep.
It's so hard to just put the right lens on, I guess, for me. I struggle with that one. And the hybrid thing, like, I think I'm going to sell my A7 S3 when that A7 5 drops, just because it takes better. It's going to, you know, I think it's going to be a 33 or 44 megapixel sensor, so you can get great shots with it, pictures, and then also be able to film in 60 frames a second without a crop and all that. I'm looking forward to see that thing come out.
Yeah, dude. You're right on par. Like, the amount of lenses that I've bought and sold over the last 5 years would blow your mind. Just trying to find that lens that just is perfect. Doesn't exist that I know of. Like, that 35 to 150 Tamron is gangster, but it's this big and weighs 5 pounds. You know, some of the best cameramen I know run that lens. You know, your Micah Morgan, your Mitch Neeb, a bunch of those dudes run that lens. And what I found, man, is I got to have two camera bodies on me at all times. I got to have the A7 IV. I have like a compact setup with my 20 millimeter. And then I have their hot shoe mic, even though I hate those mics. It's just so compact and I can film low light stuff. I can hurry and film a talking head. I can film like some tight B-roll or anything. And then I have my 24 to 105 on my chest with my FX3, you know. And that's where I'll get those tighter shots and be able to, you know, compose my subject a little bit differently, not just wide open all the time. But yeah, man, it's ever changing. Like, I've tried selling my 24 to 105 10 times, you know, and I think everybody and their dog tries to sell that lens because they're chasing that lower f-stop. But the more I like spend time outside filming and hunting, it's like I'm cranking that f-stop up anyways in the middle of the day. Like, low light, I'm going to use my 1.8 lens, you know, and there's no need. Like, even a 2.8 would not suffice now that I've tasted, you know, a 1.8 or even a 1.2. So it's like, I don't know, man. It's all crazy. Like, that, what did Sony just drop? Was it that 28 to 70? It's like a weird focal range. And it's an F2, I think. That one has had me like on the edge. But man, I don't think there's a right answer. Like, I know guys, like when I was filming and taking photos with Stephen Drake, he was prime or die, you know, like prime lenses. And he did run a 70 to 200 at all times too. But I've had people who do that and then people who only run zoom lenses, and it's, there's not a right or wrong answer, but at the end of the day, it's like there's a lot of low light stuff happening in hunting, and that's where an FX3 and a 1.8 lens makes it look stupid, like it looks fake. You know, I have to go in and change my aperture. Like, when Eric's like, oh, it's last light, we're out of shooting light, and it looks high noon with the FX3, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all just personal preference, but yeah, the FX3 is the best bang for your buck for filming. But I will say, coming from an A7 body, it screws with your brain, man. Like, your on off switch is on the left side. You have to use two hands to turn it on and off. The record button's different. All the buttons are different. So if you're just super comfortable with an A7 body, an FX3 will kick your trash for quite a few months.
Yeah, I don't think I want to put myself through that. I've had a hard enough time figuring out how to use these dang things.
Yeah, man. It was funny. I was talking these guys into buying me an FX3. They're like, you already have like an A7 S3. What's the difference? I'm like, oh, it's just the cinema, you know, has the built-in fan, the top handle, you know, better stabilization. Talking to them about this stuff, and they're like, okay, like, guess we'll buy it. And like, that whole first 2 months, man, I'm like, I hate this camera. But like, I was too prideful to like sell it.
Yeah.
But now I've just fallen in love with it.
Yeah. Yeah. The A7 IV was one that I've almost bought a couple of times, but I like to film all my stuff in 60 frames a second, just because I'm not good enough to like plan out when I want to slow something down. You know what I mean? So I can slow anything down if I want to slow down when I get home. And that A7IV crops in at 60 frames a second, right?
Yep.
And since like I'm always like, I have a lot of logging footage in my footage because it's all self-filmed. So I can't really have the crop. I don't want the crop. You know what I mean? So I'm really hoping that A7V comes out at 60 FPS with no crop, because that's going to be, in my opinion, it's going to be the best all-around camera you can get your hands on.
So now I got a question for you. How many damn SD cards do you fill up filming 4K 60 at all times?
Honestly, usually it's like 1.5. Let me grab one real quick. So I'm using these pro grade 256s. I don't know if you can see that. Or
Lexar.
Not. Yeah.
Is that a V60? V60 Lexar.
V90.
Oh dang, yeah. So same cards I run. I just run 128s though, V60s and V90s. But yeah, man, that's an investment just in cards. That's where I'm like, that's wild that you film it all 4K 60. And for those people listening that don't know a lot about cameras, they're just tuning out right now. But yeah I'm almost the exact opposite. I have to like, what's the word, like ration my storage, because some of these trips we go on are so long that I'm like, okay, all 24 frames, you know. And then if it's like, okay, we're going on a stock, gonna do a sick B-roll sequence, I flip that thing straight to 4K 120 and I'm just going. And it's definitely a learning curve, like managing storage. And that's the scariest part of my job. That's the one thing that almost made me quit my job, was I formatted a card on the hill with the kill shots and everything.
Oh man.
Formatted the whole card. And
so you lost all the footage. So just so people understand what that means, like you lost, you cleared your whole card in the field.
Yeah. It's a long story, but let's just say that I had a mental breakdown, and luckily it was with Casey, because Casey's like father figure, like big brother, just the softest heart and just the best dude you'll ever meet. And he just hugged me and was like, I'm upset, but like, dude, you didn't mean to do that. You know, I was like, I'm quitting. Like, this sucks. Like, I never want to feel this again. Cause the thing that pissed me off the worst about the whole thing, cause it was a backcountry horseback archery mule deer hunt in the high country in Nevada. And we had been grinding, dude. And, the thing that pissed me off the most was like, I had all the shots. It was like the sickest footage ever. So it wasn't like, it wasn't like just marginal footage or just like low effort put into it and formatted it, but it was like, I had everything and it was perfect. And yeah, long story short, I had a routine where every night I'd pull my card out of the camera, put it in my card case, get a new card, put it in, format it, clean the lens, put a fresh battery in, charge my old battery, sitting there in my tent doing that. And I do that every night, just religiously. So I wake up ready to rock. And we were hunting with one of Casey's really good friends, Bryce, and he had one of our new mule deer shirts on, and he's the one who killed the buck that day. And he's walking, taking the head off of the horse and going to hang it in a tree. And I'm sitting there on my hands and knees putting a new card in, and I see it and it's like sunset. I'm like, Bryce, don't move. Don't move. Like, dude, this is the perfect photo for our website for the shirt, you know?
Yeah.
And my camera was open and I had the SD card in my hand. I put it back in, close it, format it, just like habit. But it was the card from filming all that day. And right as I clicked format, my stomach dropped, dude. I was like, no way. Anyways, long story short, I film two SD cards now. That's a requirement for my camera bodies. I'll film one on a V90 card and one on a V30 card, you know, lower quality, but everything's simultaneous. Everything's backed up. Have it on two hard drives, two towers. Like, I'm OCD about it now, but yeah, it was a terrible, worst thing that can ever happen to a camera guy is formatting or deleting a whole hunt. Yeah, it sucked so bad.
Yeah, I could. I have a buddy, David, who probably doesn't want me to tell the story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. I had a Slayer. I work with Slayer Calls. They're one of the first companies that actually approached me, not me approaching them, which was near and dear to my heart anyway. But they hired a guy, David, Dodge Network, to come film an archery elk hunt in Idaho for me last year, 2023. And day two, it was a quick hunt. We killed a bull early, but we're working our way up this ridge and we were calling, no answers. But I heard branches break, right? Like 100 yards away. And then I could hear a bull to douche, like that trotting sound, right? And I'm like, David, there's a bull coming, like, stop. I knock an arrow. I range an opening at 40 yards. I'm like, okay, he's going to step out right in this opening. And when he does, I'm going to cow chirp and he's going to stop, you know, perfect. Everything goes just pretty much like that. This bull is a little raghorn 5-point right here, steps out 40 yards, perfectly broadside, get to full draw, whack, hit him right behind the shoulder. I look back at David and I'm like, that is the best controlled shot I've ever made on a bull in my life. That bull's dead for sure. And he's like, I could see like this blank look on his face, right? Like I hit the bull and the bull takes off and he's looking at his camera and I could see him like scrolling through the clips and he looks at me and he's like, I missed the shot. And I'm like, dude, bull crap. You're messing with me. Like you're sitting right in my shoulder, like behind me. Right. And like tears almost came to his eyes. Like he was so freaking disappointed. He accidentally double tapped the record button.
Yep.
And the look in his face, like I can't even describe, like you could see how upset he was that happened. Right. So he didn't delete the video. He didn't format the card, but he missed the shot. And I can only imagine how you felt, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like so much work to get all that footage. And when you don't get it or you lose it, it's gotta be just heartbreaking.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you do this long enough, you'll double click the record button, format cards. I've done both. And the most frustrating part, I was like venting to Casey when I was having my mental breakdown. I was like, I'm away from my newborn baby, you know, sacrificing all this time. And I just blew it, you know? It's like, I have nothing to show for it. So luckily he was there. But yeah, man, I double-clicked a record button on an Axis deer, Brian's first Axis deer in Hawaii. Luckily I was filming with two cameras and made it work or whatever. And Logan did that on a moose with Casey, like Casey's giant moose, first shot, double record. Dude, it happens to everybody. If you haven't done it yet, you haven't filmed long enough, and I'll tell you right now, put a damn action camera on your head, put a GoPro action 4 or action 5 on your head and just run that when things get heated, because dude, action cameras have saved my butt hundreds of times.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question about autofocus and manual focus. The reason I ask this is because when I put that rifle elk film together, I was in manual focus because the bull was in the sage and there were a bunch. There was like 30 elk, like spikes and cows around him. And I'm thinking in my mind in the heat of the moment, like I'm going to be manual focus so the camera doesn't accidentally focus on another elk or focus on the sagebrush that was like right in front of him, kind of like at the bottom of his chest cavity. And I get the shot and a 200 to 600 lens with the 1.4 teleconverter on him. So I'm like zoomed in pretty good. And, I'm thinking like, dude, this is going to look money. And I get home and I get it up on Adobe Premiere Pro and I'm like, it's out of focus. God freaking dang it. And I was using the red setting on the camera that shows you like what you're focused on. So I thought I was perfect, but I wasn't. So I'm curious, like, do you run autofocus or do you run manual focus or do you switch back and forth? Is it like a hybrid thing for you? How do you handle that?
Back and forth. Like, it's all situational. On the A7IV, you have focus mapping, which is, I think, is better than like the peaking display with the outlines or whatever. But yeah, man, I run autofocus, but I also run that adjustable square and I have it on the small setting. So I'm like the whole time I'm filming, I'm just moving that joystick, you know? And now these cameras are so crazy. The eye autofocus is so sticky and just perfect that's what I run most of the time. But when Eric or Casey or Brian are walking through the trees, I'll run that selection focus, that small square, lock it on them, and then hold focus as they're going through the trees. But there's been 100 times, you know, elk are coming in, and like I spent 30 days on the White Mountains in Arizona this year just filming elk every day, 10 or 20 bulls into bow range. So I got really good at setting up, getting in a shadow, setting my lens, filming, and some of my best work I've ever done. And dude, 99% of that stuff was just all manual focus. So it's tough, man. Every scenario is different. I think if you're going to be an elk hunter, you have to learn how to run manual focus if you're hunting rutting elk. And then if you're going to like be a run and gun antelope or mule deer type of hunter, you got to be trusting your autofocus and the tracking features of that. So it's, I do both, man, but I will tell you this, that I have screwed up more times trying to be bougie and run manual focus than just letting autofocus take the wheel. And I'll be the first to admit that. So it's all situational. I found that running a monitor a lot of times, like if we're doing day hunts and we're not backpacking, I'll rig my camera up and run a monitor. And that way I'm filming and I can see what's in focus when I'm running manual focus. So that's what I was doing. The White Mountains was I was running a monitor. You know, you can zoom in just by pinching on the monitor. You set the focus, zoom in, you're like, okay, it's in focus. That's the fastest and best that I found. But yeah, it's kind of all situational.
Dude, you're on a whole nother couple levels. That's insane. Holy cow. I could pick your brain. I would love to meet you in person with my camera body and pick your brain about some stuff someday.
Yeah, man. I'm open. I'm an open book. I've learned a lot from people and I don't know everything, but one of my favorite things to do is optimize camera settings and just quick features. You know, I can go from 24 to 60 to 120 just with one button. And I have all my picture profiles and everything set up the same on all my cameras. And that's where me and Logan really clashed was I'm an ND filter snob and the 180 rule with, you know, the shutter speed and everything. And he was not. He's anti ND filter and he's just running that shutter speed and aperture to expose. And his settings were always backwards of mine. You know, he was always running 4K 60 and I was always 4K 24. And then I'd move it. And it was hard to grab his camera. Like he'd hand me his camera for a shot because he had a different lens on and I'd just be lost. I'd be like, man, this sucks. So everybody has their own way. And that's the coolest thing about being creative is there's not a right way. Like, the 180 rule, you know, just it doesn't mean crap. Like you might have better motion blur and it might look like the Hollywood films, but it doesn't mean crap. Some of the best creatives I've ever met, like Mitch Neeb or Logan Butler, you know, those are probably the two most creative people I've ever filmed and hunted with. And both those son of a guns don't run ND filters and just, I mean, they'll crank that shutter speed, but their footage is so sick. You know, and it's like at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. So it's all personal preference, but man, there's a lot of ways to skin this cat.
Yeah. So it's funny you say that. I've got the Peter McKinnon variable ND 2-5 on my body or on my lenses. I have the adapter on all my lenses so I can just pop that ND filter on any of my lenses. And I've got my camera set at, the shutter speed's at 125 because I'm shooting in 60 frames a second. Explain the 180 rule to me though. I'm drawing a blank on that.
So you're doing the 180 rule. So the 180 rule, I guess, is just the reciprocal rule. So 180, you know, half of 360. So yeah, you're already doing it, man. So you and I would get along really well and film really well together. I run the same, the Peter McKinnon, you know, Polar Pro Mist ND filter, have the step up rings on everything. And yeah, I do find that 2-5 is not enough a lot of times with my wider, with my wider lenses. So it pisses me off when I have to take my 1.8 lens and turn it to like a F2.5 or crank the shutter speed up to like 1/80. And I'm like, son of a gun, you know, in my brain, my OCD brain, I'm like, this is pissing me off so bad right now, but you have to do it.
Yeah, so. It's funny you say that too, because when I was putting that elk video together, I'm like, I have an ND filter on the whole hunt and I've got it at 5, right? Like as far over as it goes, and it's still overexposed, like way overexposed, way too blown out. And it drives me freaking nuts. It's like, why am I carrying all this crap around and I still can't get it right? And the funny thing too is the A7S3 has the ability to toggle from 24 to 60 to 120. I figured out how to run the camera. I figured out Adobe and all this other crap, but I still haven't taken the time to set up my cheat code buttons. It's just being stupid. I need to do that. But anyway, cameras are insane, dude, especially for a knucklehead like me, dude. Like coming from construction and trying to figure out how to run all this technology has been, it's been comical, to say the least. Well,
you're crushing it, dude. Like I've watched a bunch of your films lately, and I hear you talking and I see like the quality of stuff you're putting out, and it's really easy to be the guy filming and editing and just seeing all the flaws, right? And then you go and you're watch like a gritty film or like a go hunt film or any of these films, and you're like, man, those guys are the next level. And mm-hmm. they are, but you're also seeing it from your perspective. You're not seeing it as gritty, you know? Brian watching his own film, he probably can't even watch the things half the time. And same with like Luke Dozenberry, who does a lot of the go hunt films. Mm-hmm. Like it's just funny because some of the best films I think I've ever done, I go to watch back and I'm like, man, I watch it a year later. I'm like, that's garbage. But then I have 100 people tell me, dude, that's like the best hush film ever documented and produced. And it's like, well, I don't believe it, but thanks, you know, but I guess you're a lot more rough on yourself, I guess, because your stuff's legit, man. And like you tell a good story. But yeah, the hardest part is hunting and hunting the way you and I do. You know, a lot of that backcountry, public land, crappy tag type of hunts. You don't get a lot of opportunities, and they happen fast and they never happen the way you would like them to happen. So I feel your pain, man, but you're still crushing the content. Like, it's impressive. Like, there's not many people like you doing it, especially I don't even want to call you an up and comer, but like growing channels, you know, there's not a lot of
again. Oh, I lost you the last part of that. But hey, I really appreciate it, man, because I'm definitely my own worst enemy. I think a lot of us are, but I just pick my crap apart, and a lot of my buddies are like, dude, that was a good video. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to say that because we're buddies, right? Like, I can't give myself any credit. I always am just like, man, I wish I would have done this. Man, I wish I would have done that. This audio freaking sucks, or, you know, whatever. I always focus on the negative, which is probably like one of my worst personality traits. It's been a heck of a journey. And when I look back at some of the stuff I put out like 4 years ago, and it's not even like uploaded in the right framing, and it's so, so bad. I'm like, okay, I am making progress. I am getting better. So,
yep. Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. I had an old wrestling coach that would tell me, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And I live by that. I try and find something every day or each week or something, some little step or edge to make me better than I was last year, last month, you know, and I think you're doing the same.
Well, I appreciate it, man. Well, dude, I didn't even get to like 3/4 of the stuff I wanted to ask you, but I think I've had you on for over an hour now. So we probably lost a lot of listeners with all this camera geeking out crap, but that's all right. I don't really care. So anyway, yeah,
me either, man. We'll have to do it again, maybe a part two, and we can dive into the stuff that you want to talk about, not just me talking the whole time.
No, not at all. It wasn't you talking. We just, I got lost in this camera stuff because I geek out on it, trying to get better with it. So, but I know you're trying to go watch the UFC fights. There's football on, all that good stuff. I got some work to do outside. So I just want to say, man, I really appreciate your time. And it was a pleasure chatting with you.
Likewise, man. Likewise. And I hope to meet you someday and keep crushing the content.
One of these years, I'm going to fly out to the Salt Lake City Expo. It's just hard after hunting season to take more time off to go to that. You know, I really want to go, but you guys got to come out to Oregon some year. Come to the Portland show or something. I come meet you there.
Yeah, they did it one year, but now they just overlap them. I don't know who's doing the Portland show, but they should really like look at the schedule. Same with Salt Lake, and just be like, hey, let's not overlap. But yeah, I agree, man. I'd love to come out to Portland one of these years.
Yeah. Well, right on, man. Well, you have a good night, and we definitely got to do this again.
Thanks, brother. Yeah, take it easy.